biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. I'm Alex Worley. Welcome to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
Hi, I'm Mark Lack, CEO of Shorten the Gap. Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. And joining me today is Ryan Costello, the CEO and co-founder of Event Farm. It's great to have you on the show, brother.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be here.
So how do you go about recruiting and hiring the right people? Is there a process? Is there a procedure?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of them. It's not just one, you know, you get this list and you pick and choose who you want to work with. There's a lot of tactics. And certainly today, there's a ton of recruiters that help companies.
There's so many recruiting companies out there.
So many recruiters. I did some hilarious math the other day when I was just trying to talk about how many, just jokingly, how many phone calls we get and how many there could be. And I was talking about it from the lens, imagine if we were a recruiting company, how many competitors we would have. So I did some basic math and I was like, wow, we get 12 phone calls a day, 5 emails, that's 17 companies, we only have 3 openings. And I ended up with like some crazy number, like 7,500 companies, which I think is probably even small. Can you imagine having 7,500 competitors? Yes, it's a lot of recruiting. But I think in general, what you need to be doing as a company is projecting your vision and your culture to attract the right people. Right. So it's a two-way street. You should be attracting people to come in that are inquiring to kind of come work with your business, and you should be proactively trying to find the right people.
Just like sales and marketing. You want to make sure that you have a very congruent, authentic, transparent, clear message to market match or product to market consumer match.
Yep, and the inbound outbound engine, like that's doing. You know, I know it sounds a little bit too businessy, but in some cases, but that's it. You know, you need to have those both those efforts going. For us, we're lucky enough to have a lot of inbound. You know, we get 5 to 10 applicants per day.
Are there any platforms specifically that you guys would recommend that you use?
Yeah, one that's really interesting for us is AngelList. It's not really a recruiting platform. It's more of a fundraising platform, but it's free for employers. And we get the people, if you're in tech and in the startup community, there's a lot of, you know, people that are on that platform because they're interested in the space and looking at companies, how much money they've raised, what's going on. So we get a ton of interesting candidate applicants coming in from AngelList, and we don't pay for it. Certainly, there's all that the recruiting technology and services that are out there. We dabbled in certain ones. It's expensive. It's tough. Sometimes it works. But for us, we're hoping that the company and the culture and the brand are attracting the right people. Then once we have the candidates, then it's on, I think, me, and this is what Steve was trying to say in his job and the management team to sell them on the dream.
Talk about, you know, the vision and culture and company values in just a second. But have you heard of Gary Vaynerchuk, the entrepreneur?
Of course.
Of course, right? So one of the things I love that I heard from Gary about hiring and recruiting is Gary said when he has somebody that he ends up firing because of whatever reason it might be, he actually tells them to go and rant about why they fired online. And there's actually specific websites he'll tell them, go to this website, and it's like glass ceiling or something like that.
Yeah.
And go and write a terrible or just express the truth about you being fired. And so the reason why he does that is because he wants them to vent about all of the things about them and why they got fired and say, this company's terrible. Because the people that will read those reviews, he doesn't want to hire. So it's sort of like his mechanism, like a scarecrow, right? He wants those to scare away the people that are like that, so that they're deferred from wanting the job. Do you think that's creative?
I think it's incredibly creative. I think it's interesting. We haven't gone that far.
It's the opposite of what most people would do. Most
really
people don't want bad reviews. He's doing the opposite.
Well, it's interesting. I do the same thing on Yelp, right? If I see a restaurant review and I look at the negative comments and I see the reason why they're complaining, the person didn't bring my french fries on time. Like, that's not the reason why I wouldn't want to go to the restaurant.
Yeah, they brought me garlic fries instead.
Yeah, the salt shaker wasn't right. You know, it's like, well, I want to know why you said no to this. So that's it. I'm sure it's the same tactic. It's really interesting.
So back to culture and values and, you know, company retention, millennials statistically are going to jump 16 careers over the course of their life. That's very dangerous and expensive for business owners like ourselves who are looking to hire the largest group of people right now that are getting hired for companies, millennials age 18 to 34. So what do you guys do when it comes to culture and, you know, different ways that you guys can retain employees? Because it's so important.
A lot of people will call that generation the do-it-yourself, you know, generation as well. They want to have ownership of their career. They don't want to be what their parents said. This is what you do. This is the progression. You don't have 2 years, then you get a promotion. They want to be they want to feel like they can control the fate of where they're headed in the company or in their careers.
And as soon as they feel like they're not going to, they jump right to the next one.
So We've experimented with, you know, creating your own titles. We've experimented with having people create create roles for others that are coming behind them. And it's, you know, similar to what you would do with someone that's on the management track. But any way you can to let them feel ownership. You write the job description of what your job should be, right? We'll review it and talk about it together. You set the quota that you think the sales team can hit, or you can hit as a sales rep, how many calls you think you need to make. Little tactics like that really get buy-in, because then they're building it with you and not just feeling like they're in the, you know, the factory, you know, going down the line.
And nowadays, people want more than just financial compensation. I think that was maybe an old school mindset was, you know, you could just give people financial compensation and that would keep them on board. But statistics and research show nowadays, millennials care more about praise, appreciation, gratitude, feeling like they're a part of a tribe and a community and something that's going to take their career to a long-term, you know, vision. So is there anything like that that you guys do that's fun and creative to show praise and gratitude and, you know, appreciation for your employees?
You know, we have a strong culture. I would say we are tribe. I like that word that you used. It really feels like a tribe. We work in the events industry, and the events industry by nature is really high pressure, really, you know, it all culminates into one critical night if you're an event person. So there's like this adrenaline that carries, and we are at our clients' events all the time, but their adrenaline runs through our company. So you can see us getting excited when we know a client has a big event tonight, or dozens of clients have a big, you know, big night tonight. And I think we really gravitate off that. The other thing that I will say is that I say this to a lot of people. I think as for us, our company, we enjoy the struggle a bit. Like if this was easy, they would leave. Yeah. You know, we're growing so fast. This is like, you know, there's almost this weird sick pleasure in like trying to make it and try to find it and hustle and grind it out. And collectively, we built it. So for us, I think if you asked our employees, like, you know, they would tell you that they, yes, sometimes it's hard and we work too many hours, but they enjoy the struggle.
So then values obviously has to be something that's really important. You said if we've got a company that's growing really fast, you've obviously got to hire specific people who are, one of the top values is growth. So is that something that you guys do, is make sure that when you're hiring people and just the people you already have hired, that you're making sure everybody is in alignment with your company values?
Yeah, we actually have a series of questions we ask every single candidate, regardless of the position. And as a company, we voted on the best answers. So we all submitted answers after being employees. And then we voted as a team on what we thought the best answers would be. And those answers are what we would expect this candidate to have to try to do. That's one thing, you know, one tactic that we do really well. And these are questions that are all geared towards our core values. So one of our big threads for us is authenticity. So how do we judge if you, Mark, are authentic?
Yeah.
Like what answers would I expect you to say? You'd be showing empathy. You'd be, you know, telling the truth. You'd be looking me in the eye. These are all things that we're giving points for in our interview process, saying, yes, Mark is truly an authentic guy that will, you know, embody our culture.
So quickly, I'm going to do two different questions here. First one is for the business owner. As we come to a wrap here, we got business owners listening in and they go, yeah, some of that stuff's pretty good. Some of it's common sense. What's one sentence or two that you could give them? Like, here is the mantra for making sure that you can retain or recruit amazing employees and talent.
Do not underestimate. Don't take people for granted. I think I've done that. Honestly, I don't give myself a 100% gold star on getting this right as a manager. And
yeah, me neither.
I don't. And I find that people love to be rewarded and taken care of and saying thank you and saying good job. We're human beings.
We undervalue appreciation, I think.
And even ourselves. Like, I would love it if you said, hey, good job here. You know, and nice job, nice interview.
Yeah.
We like that. And I think as managers, we forget that the day-to-day is a grind and like little things. One of the things, you know, I asked my management team is like, have you said good job to every single one of your team in the last 30 days, the last 2 weeks? Just reminding, you know, the little things.
I love that. So now let's shift gears. The second one, as we come to a wrap here, is we got the aspiring entrepreneurs, right? They're looking to start their own business, or maybe they're looking to work their way up in a career, but they're afraid. They don't feel like they have the resourcefulness, the confidence, the connections, whatever limiting beliefs or excuses that they've convinced themselves of. What is the advice you have for them to either work their way into a career that they are more passionate about, or to take that leap of faith and to start a business?
On the joining a company, like let's say they want to join a startup, which is really interesting for me, and we have a handful of these people early on that just made it easy for me to hire them. Made it easy. Not, hey, can I get a job? What can I do? Like, they went out and solved a problem for me and showed up with a solution on my door. And I said, can I work with you now? They made it super easy because, you know, as a young company and I'm pulled in a million directions, I can't focus on all these things. And so that made it obvious. It was like, yes. And there were several examples in our company where people just really fought their way in and just said, Ryan, here. look, this is proof that I need to be here. And it was just like, you're here, and they've been here ever since. So that one is like, if you want to join a company, if you want to start a company, I think, you know, for me, I got lucky with a good co-founder and partner early on. So finally, I would really recommend entrepreneurs out there to don't go it alone. That can be hard, you know, emotionally challenging, financial risk, all those kind of things. Having a good partner in crime is a great sounding board to celebrate with you and to, you know, be frustrated with you, which is equally important. Yeah. So don't go at it alone, and look for a co-founder or at least a supporting cast that can be part of your team early on.
Well, I love that. Ryan Costello, the CEO and founder of Event Farm. I appreciate you for coming on our show, brother.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Guess what? Right now is the perfect time to tackle those home projects you've been putting off. So come summertime, you can just sit back and relax. HomeAdvisor can help get you started. HomeAdvisor matches you to the right pro for the job in seconds. You can read reviews and even book appointments online. HomeAdvisor can help with any home project, big or small, painting, plumbing, even remodeling. Find a great pro now before the busy season hits. Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app. HomeAdvisor.
Have you heard about Newsmax TV? It's America's fastest growing cable news channel in 70 million homes. Every minute, every day. Watch Newsmax for breaking news on President Trump. Plus, get insights from Bill O'Reilly, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, Mike Reagan, and more. You can find Newsmax TV on DirecTV, Xfinity, Dish, Optimum, Spectrum, Fios, UVerse, Suddenlink, Wow, and dozens of cable systems. So check your guide now and watch Newsmax TV. Real news for real people.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Our guest today joining us is Eric Jones, and he's the founder of Sidestep. Eric, it's a pleasure to have you, brother.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us, what does your company do, Sidestep?
So Sidestep lets fans order concert merchandise before, during, and after the show for VIP pickup or delivery.
Okay, and give me a contextual example.
So if you're a fan of Beyonce and you're going to her concert at Rose Bowl, you can see all the merch that she's going to be selling before the show. So you can be sitting on your couch in the parking lot outside of the venue. You can see all the merchandise available. Browse and buy whatever you'd like. Choose the show you're going to, and it'll be waiting for you when you get there.
So how did you create the partnerships? Because love the idea. I think it's genius. And I think, of course, Beyonce would think it is as well, because it's an opportunity for her to make more money as well as the venue. Mm-hmm. But how do you establish those partnerships?
Yeah, so I started in the music industry before Sidestep, and I understood a lot about, you know, who the major players were, like the merch companies, the management companies. So I had my own network that I built for myself and for the company. But it's really a one-to-many strategy where you have one friend in the space, they'll introduce you to all these other merch companies, and once you have a couple of bigger artists using Sidestep, they start following the leader. And
so,
Can
you mention some of the people that you have on there using it?
Yeah, so Adele, Beyonce, which has been amazing. Yeah.
So it wasn't just a made-up example, that's a real one.
Yeah, she's a real one. So Beyonce, Adele, Guns N' Roses, Selena Gomez, Fall Out Boy, Panic at the Disco. The focus for us is those top-tier artists playing amphitheaters, arenas, and stadiums.
Okay, so you just mentioned some huge players in the game. What was it like getting the first one? Because I always feel like the hardest thing to do in a business is get your first big client, your first big influencer or musician in this case. So what was it like getting the first one? How'd you do it?
It's probably one of the easiest ones.
Really?
I was lucky. I brought the idea of Sidestep to the founder of a merch company called Manhead Merchandise, and he believed in it from the beginning and said, I'll give you 4 months, make the product, we can have it on the Fall Out Boy tour. So it was kind of fell into our lap in a way where I had the idea, I wanted to build something to change merchandise, and you know, when you present Fall Out Boy as the guinea pig, it sounds more like a billboard, so we were really excited.
That's amazing, brother. I congratulate you for that, because I know that it's not easy, and when you kind of stumble into success or trip into it, it's an amazing feeling, because sometimes entrepreneurship, when you get started, can be extremely difficult. Was this your first company?
First company.
So what did you do before this?
Before Sidestep, before that, I was actually in a touring band at the age of 18. We got signed out of high school. It was myself and a couple neighborhood friends just doing Green Day covers. Started making our own music, and then Photo Finish and Atlantic Records picked us up, which was awesome. Toured the country, Japan, Indonesia, playing for a ton of people. Had a song on radio and basically just did that for a good 5 years. Then after that, wanted to pursue...
And you're a young guy, so that was like a good portion of like your young adult life.
Yeah, instead of going to college, I figured I might as well play in a rock band. So it was an awesome experience. After that, moved to New York to pursue business, wanted to try the music industry, worked in publishing, worked in artist management, had a couple of artists signed to record labels, and then stumbled into merchandise.
So you just kind of hinted at something. You didn't go to college?
Right, I didn't go to college.
Okay.
Well, I did about a year and a half online while I was touring.
Yeah.
But after a while...
I was like, a year and a half doesn't get you a degree.
Yeah. So not quite there. But at a certain point when I was touring, I was kind of sick of studying when everyone else was having a good time. And after the show, you want to socialize and be with a bunch of people. And I didn't really feel like going to the hotel room and do homework. So
from being a touring rock star to becoming an entrepreneur and a college dropout... Founder of Sidestep, Eric Jones, is joining us. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. I love the fact that you dropped out of college, and I say that in a great way because I feel like you're going to be one of those guys. Hopefully, your company gets acquired for a ton of money if that's your exit strategy. And then people will look at you as one of those young, successful guys who dropped out of college. I myself, unfortunately, did graduate college and wasted my time, energy, and money doing that. But again, right, I don't want to be one of those guys that's complaining about an opportunity that most people would die for. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful and blessed to have had the opportunity and privilege to go to college. But for me personally, the second I graduated, I felt like the chains were loose, started my first business. So it sounds like we have a similar path in that sense that we were both kind of always going to become an entrepreneur. But did you feel like you always knew that?
Yeah, from an early age. So my parents...
Take me back to the beginning. Like, as a child, were you that guy?
I definitely was that guy, yeah. I'm a huge wrestling fan, pro wrestling. So I remember the first, entrepreneurial task I gave myself was to mow as many lawns as I can to pay for WrestleMania tickets.
That's like the standard. They sold candy bars, lemonade.
We did everything. We even made hemp necklaces and sold those around the neighborhood. But I think what really... gave me the courage to try, entrepreneurship was supportive parents. School is always very important growing up, but I was more or less a problem child. Didn't really like to go to class as much. I kind of drifted off and thought about other things I wanted to pursue, whether it be routing a fake tour that I wanted to do one day. I just knew that the creative aspect of life was more exciting than, just doing the more conventional path.
What's your advice for the entrepreneur who's out there or the aspiring entrepreneur who maybe hasn't fully started yet, but they plan to cut the cord from the 9-to-5 and go all in on their idea for a business? What's your advice? Maybe three traits that every beginning entrepreneur needs to know.
Number one, passion. You need to be passionate about whatever you're building and who you're going to be serving. That's first and foremost. Without that, I think it's going to be hard to get started.
Because passion is the thing that's kind of like the fuel that's going to keep you going. Because inevitably in entrepreneurship, and maybe you don't agree, but I feel like inevitably in entrepreneurship, you're going to get metaphorically punched in the face. You're going to get knocked down.
Yeah.
We can call those failures, mistakes, adversity, obstacles. Those are inevitable in entrepreneurship. And I think passion is the thing that keeps you getting back up.
It is, yeah. And I think that's a good channel is also toughness. I think you need to be very tough to be an entrepreneur. It's really hard. I think that's why not that many people want to do it.
You got to be able to weather those storms.
And there are plenty of storms, yeah. But toughness is definitely right up there as well. Okay. And then I think resilience, which is kind of parallel to toughness, but with resilience, you will get kicked down a lot and then kicked while you're down. But if you understand what the mission is of the company, if you know that if you have employees, they wake up every day to put time and energy and passion and heart into what the vision is. Or if you have investors, they believe in you to build something really great. So you need to have resilience because not only are people relying on you, but people believe in you, they believe in the company. And I think that's something to fight for.
Well, you said investors. I want to know if you had to raise money, so don't tell me yet. But I love those three traits because I agree as an entrepreneur myself and being a young one like you, those are three things that I feel like have allowed me to weather the storms and really get up and love what I'm doing every day with the passion part of it. But on top of that, what is something that you wish you could go back to your younger self and share one piece of advice? You gave three great pieces of advice for other individuals getting started, but for you, what was that one piece of advice you would share with yourself when you were starting in your first year?
I think, if you have, the reason why I actually committed to doing Sidestep of all ideas, because I was always that kid that had a bunch of ideas, and I would share these ideas to a bunch of my friends. But then I slowly became the guy that had a lot of ideas but never pursued any. And I one day thought of this metaphorical idea of you walk through like a cemetery and all your ideas are the tombstones, and how at a certain point you want to pursue that idea and really make the most out of it. So I think what I would tell myself is to take those chances even younger than I am today, because there's so many good ideas that can just pass you by and they'll just disappear, and many of which would love to do one day. So I would probably tell myself to take that leap of faith, you know, if you really believe in the idea, and not just talk yourself out of something because it's a risk or it's challenging.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with Eric Jones to dive into your company. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
So you sit down and you do your budget and you look at all your monthly costs, your bills, your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would help? What would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. And that is the typical savings, $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your healthcare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it works. No wonder more than 400,000 people are doing this now. And look, whether you're single or married or you have kids, this can make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. Just think what you could do with $500 a month. That can cover a car payment or pay back loans or whatever. Join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Find out more. The MediShare people are so easy to talk to. They can answer any questions. They're super friendly. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
The experts at web.com.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Joining us is Brian Copley. He's the CEO of City Builder. Brian, what's up, brother?
Having a good time in LA. Thanks for inviting me.
Good to be on the show, bro. So tell us, what is City Builder?
City Builder uses artificial intelligence to determine the best use of every piece of land.
Interesting. Elaborate. Give me some context.
So your
paint
kid,
the picture for me.
You're playing SimCity. Okay. You've got a blank slate. You don't know what to put where, right? You start by putting down industry next to, you know, parks, and then kids get sick and turn into monsters and Godzilla your city, and then you have to start over, right? Cities actually were put together without a lot of technology. And so now we're looking at cities and we're thinking about how we can create smart cities that create happy, functional, sustainable communities. And we're using data to create better cities that work better for the residents, the capital, so like the investors, developers, builders, and also the cities themselves. So what we're doing is taking all of that data, synthesizing it, and saying what's the best thing we can do with every piece of land.
And what have the results been? Because you just like, you like pitched it perfectly. I'm like, and what is the results from
and
the data?
And we can do a lot better.
Okay, that's the bottom line. Give me some examples of things that are not working well, things that we should be doing.
Number one example, housing. Has the cost of your housing gone up in a way that has caused you any grief?
No.
No?
It's gone. Has it gone up that's caused me grief?
Yeah.
Have I made more money and been mad about it?
No. On the other side, have you had to pay for housing? So there's a lot of people paying rent or people buying homes.
Yeah.
So a lot of people maybe in our age demographic are looking at purchasing their first property, and they're watching those property costs go up 10-15% a year.
Okay.
And if you're saving up and you're thinking about making that down payment, that's pretty disheartening. So just creating more housing
supply.
You got
to put that 300-400 G's down on the line there or more.
Yeah, exactly. If you're in San Francisco, right? So you're thinking about, you know, everyone needs a place to live. You have Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You have like, you know, shelter and clothing, and shelter is like the number one thing that everyone needs. And the cost just continues to go up because we're not building smart. We're not building more housing. And so we have a huge shortage nationwide of housing, especially good housing, housing that gets you close to school, close to work, an area where you can walk and you can get access to restaurants, you can get to your school.
So how are you guys providing the solution to this? I understand we have the data.
Yeah.
So how do you provide the solution?
We make it very easy on you. You go to citybuilder.com, you type in your address, we tell you what the best use of your property is, And about one out of four times, it's not what your property is now.
So meaning?
Meaning you live in a house. Mm-hmm. Zillow or some other place tells you your house is worth X, right? Yeah. And it's always been that way for 10 years. If you're trying to figure out what your property is worth, you talk to a real estate agent or you go to one of these tech companies and they tell you, hey, this is what your property is worth. But the problem is they're asking their own question. Mm. It's not what is my property worth? It's what is my property? And in a lot of cases, about one out of four cases, your property is not what it exists as today. Like your house is not a house. It's actually more valuable as a development site. So if you could take a house and create 16 more homes or apartments with it, it's much more valuable as an apartment site, as a development site, than it is as a home. And that's what we've democratized, that information for any property owner.
So at the end of the day, am I supposed to, like, I can't just sell my house in my neighborhood and turn it into a condo. You know, there's rules against that. So how do you go about that?
Well, we look at all existing information like zoning. We look at land use. We look at other information like demographics. Would it make sense to put X type of development in this area? Mm. But yeah, zoning is a very important contributing factor to determining what can be built where and what should be and will be built where.
Okay.
So right now we're using what's called by right zoning.
Okay.
So if it's already zoned for a certain type of development, then we can tell you exactly what can be built there. And then after we show you all permitted uses, we show you the best use. So we could put, let's say, 16,000 total buildable square footage of apartments where your house is now.
Okay.
So maybe your house isn't worth $800,000, it's worth $1.1 million to a developer. For a property owner in Seattle, this exact thing happened. Property was worth $950,000 as a house. We told them it was worth $1.2. They listed it on our platform. We've got about 300 investors, builders, and developers there ready to make bids. And lo and behold, a week later, they got a bid for $1.2 million.
Tell me about the intellectual property that you guys have when it comes to your service as a software, and what makes it so special and what makes it so attractive, because you guys just got into LA today, which is a huge accomplishment. Again,
yes,
congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And you've got, I'm hearing, like, you were like, investors, construction workers, blah, blah, blah. You got so many things going on. How the heck does your software, how is it so appealing to all these people?
Yeah, so
I'm still trying to wrap my head around what this thing is.
There's two questions here, so I'll answer the IP question first. We have a few patents that we filed. We have some trademarks, so we protect.
So you're putting those nukes in the launch pad ready to go to battle if you need to.
You hope you never need them, right?
Yeah,
they just kind of sit there.
That was how it was taught to me. It was, patents are worthless until you have to go to war.
Yeah, you
and the more patents you have, the more nukes you have. So.
Yeah, and what makes it interesting is that we've created a lot of real estate technology, you know, when I talk about just tech.
Yeah.
We've created a lot of interesting real estate technology, but what we haven't done is look at the best use of land. Mm. We've done a good job valuing what exists today, but as we know, we live in a dynamic world and things change.
Yeah.
And urban environments are changing and people are changing and the wants of millennials are changing urban environments. Millennials want to be closer to the places they work.
And less people are owning cars and property.
Absolutely. Ownership is changing.
In the near future, not too far, people won't own houses as much as they do. People won't own cars as much as they do. Lots of things are going to start changing.
We're seeing that trend, definitely. And I think that what's happening is the urban environment and the landscape and housing and all these different types of development are responding to these changes. And so we're looking at those changes and we're using really interesting statistical measurements like linear regression and lots of other interesting words that a 20-year-old who runs our company or runs our technical side of the house would do a much better job of explaining than I would. But we're looking at all of that data, and we've got over 10 billion points of data on 118 million properties in the U.S., 3,163 counties in the U.S. with, on average, 257 zone types. And none of that information has been aggregated or standardized or normalized.
It's an interesting concept, what
so you
guys have created
here.
Stuff,
and you don't know what you can do with all this land, and you have all this data, and it changes, and it's dynamic. And what machine learning does is it takes all that data and it synthesizes it and says, these are the insights. This is what you should do with these pieces of land. This is what's likely to change. This is how. And then it it democratizes that information and gives it to a layman, like an investor or a builder or developer, and says, this is what you should build where. And for a property owner, it says, hey, you've hit the jackpot. You know, you thought you had a piece of coal, there's a diamond in there. You thought you had an oyster, there's a pearl in there. And people don't know that. And I'm really excited about the fact that a lot of people who own these development sites, who have lived in these homes for generations, maybe grandpa gave it to mom, gave it to me now, right? And they don't understand that that's going to be an apartment. In 10 years, that's going to be an apartment standing right where their home is.
Just based on the data from 10 billion different points that you guys are able to synthesize through your process and take that information and show people, here's what's coming, here's what's happened, here's where you are. And based on those projections, you guys are able to give it a different value based on a whole new algorithm.
Exactly. Okay. So we're, instead of just writing them a research paper.
I have connections for you.
Hey, thanks. We love
it. I'm learning more. I just need to learn more about what you need support with.
Yeah. I mean, you've got an idea of what your property's worth.
Okay.
We have another idea for you. Mm-hmm. And that idea is based on what the best use of your piece of land is. And I feel like every property owner, within a year, every property owner will start their home sale or home purchase journey on City Builder because they've got to find out, okay, if I have this piece of land, what should I do with it? Before you can understand what it's worth, you have to understand what it is. Mm-hmm. And we'll give you that information for free and then hopefully make a connection with you, the property owner, if that's you, mm-hmm. with someone who's interested in a property like yours. Or if you're a builder, then we want to help you find the right site.
CEO of City Builder, Brian Copley, is joining us. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. From your perspective, what do you feel like is something that would be beneficial to our listening audience of aspiring entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs?
Well, you've got a lot of entrepreneurs watching the show. Yeah, so I think probably the most important thing to discuss is what's the most critical factor in making a successful company. Mm. And I firmly believe that the most critical factor is understanding as a founder, as a CEO, what your values are, what motivates you, and then drawing people who are motivated by the same things. If you don't align your values with those people, what you'll find is hairline fractures when things start to go hard. And then when they become more difficult, those hairlines will turn into stress fractures and initially you'll have a break. Mm. And that's tough. And being an entrepreneur is difficult enough as it is. You should really be aligned in your values with the people that you go to work with, you know, 10, 12, 14 hours a day. The people you see on the weekends, the people you miss holidays and vacations for and with. I think that's the most important part.
As we wrap up our segment, brother, what is some books, some mentors, some things
that
absolutely. You really love?
Elon Musk, a mentor and a book, as it turns out. I'm reading the book right now.
Yeah.
The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz is an excellent book. I recommend it for every entrepreneur. And who else? Who else do I really look up to? A guy named Nick Soman.
Okay.
Nick Soman's a great guy. Not a lot of people know who Nick Soman is, but he recently sold a company to Rhapsody in Seattle, and he's moved down to the Bay Area. I think he works at Zomato now. But Nick Soman is someone that people should look up. He's got a great blog. He's a good writer. He's a very humble guy, and he's someone who I aspire to be like.
Well, I'll have to check him out.
Yeah.
Brian, pleasure, brother.
Absolutely.
I got some connections for you. We'll talk about it, right?
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Now FLogic with the CEO of Violet Love Brands, Rebecca Michaels. How do you define an entrepreneur?
How do I define an entrepreneur? I think anybody who starts anything from scratch and does it on their own without a path already provided for them is definitely an entrepreneur.
What skills have you taken and applied to entrepreneurship?
A skill that I've taken from other things that I've applied to entrepreneurship. Well, considering my background as a civil engineer, I would say that my attention to detail and work ethic has definitely been something that I brought.
How did you get the startup capital or the first round of funding?
I got the startup capital through a friendly loan and also through my own bank account that I had saved for a few years after college. So,
what was the first step you took?
The very first step that I took after I had the idea to start my business was to come home and sew the first headband and test it out myself, take it on runs and wear it outdoors, indoors, and just get as much feedback as I could.
What advice would you give your teenage self in order to succeed?
Just go for it. Live every day and just charge after all of your dreams, whatever they are.
sit down and you do your budget and you look at all your monthly costs, your bills, your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would help? What would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. And that is the typical savings, $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your healthcare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it works. No wonder more than 400,000 people are doing this now. And look, whether you're single or married or you have kids, this can make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. Just think what you could do with $500 a month. It can cover a car payment or payback loans or whatever. Join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Find out more. The MediShare people are so easy to talk to. They can answer any questions. They are super friendly. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's legal.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
So what is venture capital and how can you benefit from it? We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. Joining us today to answer that question is our guest, Chad Byers. He's the co-founder and partner at Sousa Ventures. Chad, it's a pleasure to have you, brother.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so break it down for us from the basics. What is venture capital?
Yeah, so I think venture capital is investing capital in private businesses, ideally and usually ones that are very early stage with a high element of risk, helping those businesses get off ground, build products, sell that product, and eventually build a self-sustaining business that can go on to either operate independently, go public, or get acquired. And that is kind of the core elements of venture capital.
So when is the right time for somebody to go after a venture capital fund, or how do they know if a VC firm is even the right option for them?
Yeah, it's a really fantastic question. So I think the most important thing to say, and I think not a lot of VCs say this and more should be said about it, is not every business is fit for venture capital. You know, the reality is venture capital is a perfect fit for businesses that have a very high ceiling. So that is a really high potential outcome. So a company that's built in a massive market that could eventually become a $100 million, $200 million, $500 million, billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar company is more ideal for venture capital based on the kind of the needs that venture capitalists have and the investors in those venture capitalist funds. It should be said that the majority of businesses are probably better off without venture capital. Venture capital puts a lot of stresses on a business. There's expected outcomes over an expected amount of time. The reality is that a lot of companies and a lot of the great businesses that make up America, kind of your SMBs and businesses like that, actually are probably better off being self-sustaining businesses, businesses that grow with their cash flows and don't necessarily seek venture capital. So that's kind of a high-level framework on how to think about it. If your product is something that requires pretty substantial upfront investment, that it'll be really hard because you don't have cash flows to get debt or some other facility, and your business has a potential to be a really, really large company, then venture capital will be the right fit for you.
Okay, so what are some of the different options out there? I know we've got incubators, we've got angel investors, we've got crowdfunding, crowdsourcing. I just named a few of them, but what are some other options out there that people can do? So they say, great, so you know, I'm looking for funding, or I realize that at some point in my business, once we have something that's scalable and predictable and we want to grow it faster with some funding, What are some other options out there that people can look towards?
Yeah, it's a great question. So if I'm starting a business today, I think my options are, one, I try to bootstrap it. Bootstrapping is building your business with your own capital and cash flows And that's always, that should always be option number one. You end up owning your entire business, which is kind of the holy grail, right? If you realize, hey, you know, there's a lot of competitors, or I want to really step on the gas and go quicker, and I need capital, there's a couple ways to get capital. The first is you could try to look for a small business loan. And that's obviously, again, you're not giving away equity, but that comes with more complicated terms, et cetera, and obviously a payback period. You could go a crowdfunding route, so using something like Kickstarter or Indiegogo, and help crowdsource and crowdfund your project. Again, you're giving away the end project versus equity. So that's a, you know, another option, although can be very difficult. And then your third option is kind of venture capital, right? Which is selling part of your business for an investment. And within the venture capital bubble, let's kind of dive into that thread a little bit deeper. There's a bunch of options for you. So when you start off, as you mentioned, some of them, most folks end up raising a friends and family round. And so that could be, you know, 100 to 500K from friends and family, could even be smaller. And that really just gets you from kind of ideation to an MVP. At that point, a lot of folks do one of a couple things. You might go into an accelerator or incubator, something like Y Combinator or Techstars, where there's a bunch of kind of more verticalized incubators and accelerators set up today. And those can be great fits. Let's say you're a hardware company, you might go to Bolt VC or something like that. If you want to kind of skip that route, then you kind of go to angel investors. Angel investors write larger checks. They're a little bit more institutional than a friends and family round. They might rate in the $100,000 to $250,000 range. And then once you've kind of graduated from that stage, you're into seed stage venture capital. And seed stage venture capital is actually what SUSE Ventures does. So we're investing in rounds of about $2 million. We'll invest kind of $500,000 to $750,000. And we're investing in people that have a product, that product's in market, you have a little bit of revenue, but you really want to get, you know, the gas pedal going on that product. And so that's kind of the stage in which we invest. So that's kind of the your different options as you start a business.
Perfect. I appreciate you for breaking that down for us, brother, because that's like, I guess, the A to Z's of how you can go and find funding depending on where you're at. Co-founder and partner of SUSE Ventures, Chad Byers, is joining us right now. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Chad, so when should somebody, you know, we talked about when somebody should go after funding, but I want to know when somebody knows it's the right time to get funding, because we talked about that for VCs, but we didn't talk about that in general. You said that, yes, most people should probably avoid funding and bootstrap it, but when does somebody know that it's time to no longer bootstrap it and they should scale? Because there is a fine line, and I feel like there's companies out there that are really sitting on something that's profitable, scalable, and predictable, but maybe for a lack of variety of reasons, they don't know that it's the right time to go after funding, or maybe they don't know how to go about getting the funding.
Right. No, that's a great question. And I think there's a couple different answers here, and they're a little bit nuanced, but I think the reality is actually something you just said and a piece of what you just said, which is kind of when everything's working, right? So if you're out there, you've built a product over the last couple of years and things are going well, you're growing the business, it's a big market and potential. The potential for the product is really huge. You want to make sure that everything is in order. And the way I like to think about venture capital is gasoline, right? So you want to pour gasoline on the business, you know, once you're ready to really go, right? And to me, what that means is my team is in place and I know who I need to hire. So I have the core components of a great management team in place, but I could really use a couple extra hires that would, you know, really dip into our burn and our cost. But if we had those, we could really expand the business. The product's working. It's fundamentally proven from a unit economic standpoint, right? So you're paying back your acquisition costs and your LTV is solid and your unit economics are really in place. You have a deep understanding of the market and where your product and business fits into that market. You have a deep understanding of the competitive landscape and why your business would succeed if you poured, you know, $1, $5, $10 million on top of it. And if you really have all those elements ready to go, you're ready for venture capital or an outside investor. Because when you go pitch those folks, all those different elements are elements they're going to dig onto, right? Team, product, market, competition, et cetera. And when you internally are ready to answer those questions, you're going to get VCs to buy in on that vision.
Perfect, brother. I appreciate you for breaking down venture capital for us. Thanks for coming on the show, Chad.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
This information is given with the understanding that neither the host nor the station is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice. Since the details of your situation are unique, you should additionally seek the advice and services of a competent professional.
Paid spokesperson Sose is not associated with LegalZoom nor a part of LegalZoom's network of independent attorneys.